I live in a two-bedroom condo with my girlfriend and her roommate. We had downstairs neighbors for a while. Another couple and a single guy. We would hear them arguing while we were on our porch. Things were ugly. The first one to leave was their roommate. He was just a regular guy who was done hearing the couple scream at each other all day. Not long after that, the couple split up, and the man's wife left him. With nobody to help pay rent, we saw the eviction notice on his door within a month. I was coming home from work when I saw him loading his stuff into his truck. He saw me as I was trying to go up the stairs and flagged me down to talk. He introduced himself as Aaron. After telling me his sob story, he begged me to let him crash upstairs on my couch as he had nowhere to go. I told him I would consult with the others in the house. My girlfriend and our roommate, both women, weren't exactly comfortable with the idea. We discussed it, though. It was December. He'd be freezing sleeping in his car and completely alone for Christmas. In the end, the nail in the coffin was when we peeked out the window and saw him break down crying. We just felt bad for him. He was elated when we told him the news. I cooked us all some dinner that night. He told us everything about what had happened with his wife, really talking our ears off while we were trying to eat. We had only given him a week to stay, so we figured we could live through whatever baggage he came with. As it turned out, we couldn't. He trashed the living room and the kitchen, raided all our food, and left our roommate's bathroom a mess. Then, on the third day, we were all in the living room together, drinking heavily and watching a movie, the three of us trying everything to forget Aaron was there. While he was drunk, Aaron made a lot of weird comments centered around how cute my girlfriend and I were as a couple, how he missed being with someone, and that it would make a lot of sense if he started dating our roommate and moved in with us. We ignored all that, but later, our roommate said she wanted him out of the house. We agreed, and I said I would break it to him in the morning. That wasn't the end of it, though. In the middle of the night, we woke up to our roommate screaming. We rushed over to her room and saw Aaron just standing inside her room. Our roommate said he'd opened the door and stared at her for a whole minute. She discreetly took out her phone and snapped a picture, which she showed to us then. It was downright chilling. Just the image of a silhouette in her doorway. Aaron's excuse was that her cat was meowing to get out. But if that were the case, he wouldn't have stepped in. Which was when she started screaming. We were all still drunk from the heavy drinking, so tensions were high. I kicked Aaron out right then and there. He protested, of course, but I just picked up his stuff and took them down to his truck. I saw to it that he drove off before I went back upstairs. A few days passed, and we gradually put our apartment back together. But only for strange messes to keep showing up. Like the ghost of Aaron was still raiding the fridge at night and leaving crumbs everywhere. We were all irritated and started accusing each other. But nobody owned up to any of it. It wasn't just that, though. Whenever I was home alone, I kept hearing noises in the ceiling. I kept trying to record it, but the sound never showed up on video. My girlfriend and our roommate didn't take me seriously. To our knowledge, we didn't even have an attic. Then, Christmas Day came. We all got up early. The first thing I noticed when I sat down in the toilet was that the bathroom smelled like stale piss. I couldn't find the source anywhere. I sprayed some deodorizer and tried to ignore it, but when my girlfriend got up, she complained about it too. All throughout the day, the smell just got worse and worse. I tried to deep clean everything, but the stench lingered on. Eventually, I got frustrated and gave up and sat down in the toilet, exhausted. A few seconds later, a drop of liquid hit my nose. I instantly knew it was piss. I looked up and saw a large stain on the ceiling, and piss was dripping down from it. I went absolutely mad and looked for a way to get up there. I found it in my closet, hidden behind clothes. A small hatch in the ceiling. Attic access. I could barely breathe as I got a flashlight and made my way up the ladder. I poked my head in, holding my breath and scanning with the light. I spotted two buckets above where the toilet was. One was on its side. Between them, I saw a face. It was Aaron. I screamed at him to get the hell out of my house. But he got up and started coming over to me, begging and pleading to let him stay. He said he was terrified of being alone and just wanted to be with us. He was so pale and thin and greasy, like Gollum. I raced down the ladder and slammed it shut. I called the police immediately and had them drag Aaron out, kicking and screaming. He got the best ending he could have. A roof over his head and 3 meals a day. Plus all the love from his cellmate he could ever want and more. I still can't believe him, though. He had a piss bucket up there, and he just let it fill up until he knocked it over on accident one day, leading to his piss dripping down into the apartment. We had all forgotten about him. He slipped in when we were all at work and left the door unlocked by accident. Lord knows none of us will ever do that again. I know he was sneaking around, so I can't help but wonder how close he got to my roommate, or if he did anything to her. A few years ago, I was driving a few hours away to have Thanksgiving with my parents. The traffic was horrendous for the first half of the trip, but once I got out into the countryside where my parents lived, the roads cleared up. About 30 minutes before I got to their house, I realized I needed to get gas. Just then, I saw a sign telling me about a gas station at the next exit. There was no other sign saying there would be anything else there. That's kind of how it is in the country. When I pulled off the highway, I saw that the place was even more depressingly empty than I expected. Aside from the gas station, which still had old-style pumps, there were a few other buildings that had been abandoned. I pulled up to a pump and saw a sign on it that said, "Cash only, no self-service." So I hopped out and headed into the store, noting that there were two cars parked outside. I walked in, figuring I'd see someone at the register and some other person buying stuff, but it was totally empty. The bell above the door echoed through a totally silent, still environment. It smelled dusty and mildewy, with a bit of rusty metal in the air, as well as the wafting odor of someone taking a dump in the bathroom. I waited at the counter for about a minute before I started to get a weird feeling, like I wasn't supposed to be there. I peeked around the aisles and saw nobody. When I called out for someone to help me, I didn't get an answer. Finally, I found the bathroom door, tucked away in the back corner. The light was on too. I walked over to it, intending to knock. But then it suddenly swung open, and a man practically jumped out at me. He said there was a spill in there or something, so the bathroom was closed until he cleaned it up. I laughed and said that was okay since I wasn't far from my destination. I clocked him for having just blown up the toilet, as he was sweating and breathing heavily, and the air coming off him was very foul. After I told him I just needed to pay for some gas, we walked over to the counter together. I couldn't tell if he was new to the job or just embarrassed and flustered, as he seemed to struggle to carry out the transaction. When he finally got through it, he told me to have a good day. I reminded him that there was no self-service, so he had to come and pump my gas for me. He got really confused for a second, then kind of sheepishly asked me if I could try figuring it out on my own. I thought for a second, then shrugged and went along with it. I walked back to my car and tried to use the pump, but the thing was so old and weird that I got confused. I decided to walk back inside and get the attendant to do his job. But when I came through the door again, the man came storming back from the bathroom, screaming at me to get out of the store. He pointed to the door, and that's when I noticed blood on his hands. He realized I saw it too. We stared at each other for a few seconds, both of us unsure what to do. Then suddenly, he ran at me.
I shoved him back, then bolted out the door.
I ran back to my car as the man chased me, barely getting inside and managing to lock the door before he could get in. I frantically searched for my keys as the man tried to break through the window, frantically starting my truck and speeding out of the station. I tried to get back on the road as quickly as possible, but before I knew it, the man had gotten into his van and was still chasing after me. I floored it to get on the main highway, but he caught up to me on the ramp and rammed into the back of my truck. He was trying to run me off the road. On the highway, he got into the lane next to me and started creeping up on my left side. I knew he was trying to outmaneuver me, so I hit the brakes hard, causing him to soar past me. Nobody was on the road around us, so I made a highly illegal U-turn over the median and started driving the other direction. I didn't want him following me to my parents' house. I didn't know the extent of what this guy was capable of, but he was obviously unhinged and dangerous. Thankfully, the switch-up gave me enough time to get out my phone and call 911. I expected to see the van race up to me again, but by then, he had given up. However, I was so far out in the middle of nowhere that the operator told me it would take a sheriff 20 minutes to get there, which I knew gave that guy plenty of time to get away. I ended up going to my parents' place, but before we sat down for dinner, I got a call back from the cops. They wanted me to come to their station and make a statement. When I got there, one of the first things they told me was that the body of the store owner had been found in the bathroom, his stomach cut open and his bowel pierced, mixing fecal matter into the blood at the crime scene. The sheriff was an older man, probably had 30 years on the job. By the look on his face, I could tell he'd never seen anything like it. I couldn't believe it either. The man I was in the store with wasn't even an employee after all. Just a crazed killer. I told them everything I could. Even how I realized the odor I smelled wasn't funny at all, as it must have been the victim's internal feces. Unfortunately, they never caught the killer. They never figured out the motive either. The best I can figure is that I interrupted an amateur black market organ harvester. Every Thanksgiving, when people talk about stuffing and carving up turkeys, all I can imagine is that poor guy's mutilated corpse. When I was 17, Halo Reach came out. My twin brother and I had played through all the Halo campaigns together, so of course we had to get the newest one. Unfortunately, our mom wouldn't buy it for us when it came out, so we had to wait for the Black Friday sale at Walmart. We saved up some cash from mowing the next door neighbor's lawn. A new family had just moved in a few weeks prior, and even though they apparently had a son I had never seen, he wouldn't do it, and the father was too busy at work all the time. On Black Friday, we drove over to Walmart and fought through the ridiculous crowds to get to where they had games. Before we got there, my brother somehow got into a conversation with a girl from our high school. They talked for at least 5 minutes, making me irritated with him for spending so much time and energy trying to get with her. Our stated mission was to get in, buy Halo Reach, then get out and go home to play the whole campaign in one sitting, not bragging about doing yard work and asking for phone numbers. I kept trying to pull my brother away, but we got annoyed with each other. I was getting impatient, but I was also stepping on his game. He eventually handed me his share of the cash and told me to just go get the game myself and meet me back at the same spot. I couldn't stand listening to my brother talk about shared algebra teachers and house parties, so I went my own way. I weaved through the people and took a copy of the Halo Reach case off the shelf, then got in line at the electronics register to pay and actually get the disc. Right after I got in line, I noticed somebody get in line behind me. Soon after, I felt them breathing down my neck, like they were looking over my shoulder. I turned around, about to tell them to get out of my personal space, but I bit my tongue when I saw the guy. He was built like a linebacker, but as if all that extra mass was straight bone. I eventually managed to ask if I could help him, and he took a few seconds to formulate a response. "That's a co-op game," he said. I replied that I knew that, and I was going to play with my brother. Then, the guy shook his head and told me I should play with him instead. He started bragging how he'd beat every Halo game on Legendary, but of course, so had I. His face turned red, and he lied quite obviously about beating them with all the skulls on, which makes the game 10 times harder. I called him out for making things up. Then suddenly, he grabbed my wrist and squeezed me so hard that it cut off the circulation. He pulled me in right up to his face and growled the words,
"Play with me."
I was about to shout for help, but just then, I heard the voice of the cashier call out to us. He was half yelling to break up the scuffle and half just trying to keep the line moving, but I was fully thankful for him. While we had been talking, all the people ahead of me in line had gone through. So after the brute dropped my hand, I walked up and paid for the game. During the entire transaction, I felt him breathing down my neck again. But this time, he was literally fuming. I was scared he might do something like grab the disc right after I bought it and snap it in half. Or worse, snap my neck. After I had the game in the bag, I turned around and looked at the guy before walking away. That's when I noticed there was nothing in his hands. It hit me that he was never waiting in line to buy anything. He was only there to talk to me the entire time. I took a step back and he took a step forward. I started to turn and walk away, but he was already following me. I panicked and burst out into a full sprint. I bumped into several people and got sworn at for yelling a bunch, but I managed to get away around a few corners. Then I found my brother. He was still talking to the girl, but when he saw my face, his mood changed. I told him we needed to go, and thankfully, he had finally gotten her number, so I was able to get him away from her. In the car, I told him about what happened, but he didn't quite get the extent of it. He didn't give me a hard time, though. I guess he was on cloud nine from the combo of getting a girl's number and being minutes away from playing a new Halo game. As soon as we got home, we booted it up and started making our way through the campaign. Night fell about halfway through, so I got up in between missions to close the blinds so nobody could see in. I looked across the gap to the new next door neighbor's house, seeing that there was a light on in a window. And under that light was that same brutish creep that grabbed me at Walmart. My heart sank. That was the neighbor's kid? The whole time I thought he was an adult. Even through the window, I could see the rage in his face watching my brother and I play together. I snapped the blinds closed and went back to the game, trying to forget about him. Unfortunately, for the next year and a half, I was tormented by that freak. He never did anything, but he watched me from his house like a hawk, day and night. I asked my mom about him, and she said after talking with the mother, she learned her son had been banned from his previous school district for severe anger management problems, forcing them to move to a different county and enroll him in a specialized school to help him with it. I guess it was working, because I could see in his eyes the brutal violence he was barely holding back. When I was just a few months old, my parents adopted a puppy. They wanted me to grow up with a friend to help me learn boundaries and discipline and all that, as well as to have a playmate. My dog's name was Charlie. He was a golden retriever, so by the time I was 9, he was getting old. That was another reason we adopted him, so I could learn about death and how to go through the emotions related to it. My parents were pretty hardcore like that, I guess. Charlie was slower than he used to be, and he was having trouble holding his bladder. He slept in my bed every night, and I didn't mind getting up to let him out whenever he needed to go. One of those nights was Christmas Eve. I woke up sometime after midnight, noticing that Charlie had hopped out of bed and was whimpering at my door. I got up and went downstairs with him to let him out into the backyard. As I walked him through the living room, I saw something in passing that I didn't even register. All the presents at the base of the Christmas tree were gone. Neither of us noticed. I was tired and Charlie only had one thing on his mind. I opened the door and let Charlie out, but I stayed in. I knew he would only take a few seconds, and it was a cold night. After a quick leak, he came running back. He climbed up onto the deck, went through the back door, but stopped right as he stepped inside. The door into the garage was to his side. He walked over to it, stuck his nose under it, and started sniffing at it intensely. I let him sniff for a few seconds, but it didn't take long for his typical curiosity to change into something else. He started whimpering again, pacing back and forth and sniffing more and more aggressively. Finally, he looked back at me, sat down, and groaned with a huge yawn. I knew Charlie wanted in there, and that he wouldn't rest until I let him. I opened the door for him and flipped the light switch, only for my jaw to hit the floor as the lights came on. There was a man dressed in a ski mask in all black trying to break into my dad's Mercedes. There was a bag full of our stuff at his feet, which he spilled as he freaked out because of the lights, turning around to see me and Charlie in the doorway. Charlie started barking like mad, and I screamed for help from my parents. In a split second, the burglar ran up to us, grabbed me, and put his hand over my mouth. Then he kicked Charlie down and took me into the garage. He dragged me back to the car as Charlie whimpered horribly. I was thrown to the ground so hard the wind was knocked out of me. Then the man told me to shut up. If I screamed for help again, he was going to kill me. I complied out of fear, but I began to cry. Charlie was on the other side of the door and he had started barking again. But now there was a tone in his voice. Some mix of anger and desperation and pain. I was terrified and heartbroken at the same time. The burglar kept trying to get into my dad's car, jimmying some thin piece of metal under the window. He wasn't able to get in before my parents arrived at the door with Charlie. They opened it up and my dad started to shout and race in, but the burglar grabbed me again and put me in a chokehold. My dad stopped in his tracks and his face turned from rage to panic in an instant. I didn't know why until I realized there was a knife against my neck. The man told my parents to stay back, give him the keys to the car and let him drive away, or he would slit my throat. My mother was holding Charlie back. He was going insane. When my dad told her to go get the keys, her hand slipped and she let go of Charlie's collar. He charged at us with speed I hadn't seen him move with in years. The burglar took the knife away from my neck. I knew he was going to point it at Charlie, so I grabbed for it and pulled it back toward me just as Charlie slammed into it. My fingers were sliced open as I held it with all my strength. Charlie was ripping into the man's legs, tearing through his pants within seconds before my dad arrived. My dad pulled me and Charlie away in one motion, and before I could even get to my feet, before the burglar could even react, my dad was on him. He took the burglar to the ground and started laying into him. The next few moments, to me, might somehow be the most traumatic. I just watched, holding on to Charlie as my dad beat every single ounce of hatred and violent instinct he ever had into this guy. It wasn't long before he was begging my dad to stop. But then it was just silence as he went unconscious. Yet even at that point, the beating continued. Only when my mom came rushing back in was my father restrained. By then, the burglar's ski mask was soaked in blood. I'm glad I never saw what his face looked like underneath. That's when the shock really set in, and I have little memory of what happened next. All I know is the burglar spent a long time in the hospital before prison, and my dad never wanted to talk about what he did to him. We got all our stuff back because of my dad. But I know it was the fact that the burglar threatened my life that sent my dad into that ultra-violent protective state of mind. He could have easily killed the guy, but thankfully my mom stopped him in time. I'm also happy to say that Charlie wasn't seriously hurt. My neighbors across the street moved in about 2 years ago. They were a reclusive middle-aged man and his teenage son who was a bit younger than me. At the start of the school year, he became a freshman at my high school. This was the first time I actually saw him. It didn't take long to learn his name, though. He was Marty, and he was a magnet for bullying. This made Marty a very sad, lonely person. By December, the effect on Marty was so visible that my mom spotted it from across the street one day. She asked me about him, so I told her what I knew, which made her seem quite heartbroken. She suggested that I go over to his house and try to be friends with him, but I didn't want to do that. If people thought we hung out, I was finished. Unfortunately, my mom basically forced me to in the end. I went over to Marty's house shortly after and knocked on the door. His father answered, blasting me with the stench from inside the house. Behind him, all I could see was an insane amount of hoarding. When I got past it, Marty's father and I introduced ourselves. I said I was going to school with his son and that maybe we should hang out. Marty's father, Gerard, invited me inside, smiling with yellow teeth and cracked lips. He told me that he and his son loved company, with deeply uncomfortable emphasis on the word love. Then, he opened the door further, and was almost about to touch my shoulder and take me inside. I stepped back, making him frown instantly. I tried to say I would rather do something outside like play basketball, but Gerard said their most favorite thing to do was entertain company. But sadly, they rarely had guests. There was no way I was going to step into that trash heap, though. While I tried to come up with excuses, Marty appeared behind his father and asked with genuine excitement if they were having company. His father said that depended on what I said next. I was petrified. Then, a sound bellowed out from deep inside the house, the echoing of a weak, droning moan. I took another step back, no longer trying to hide my emotions. Marty and Gerard turned their heads to the right. Marty started walking in that direction, then Gerard slammed the door. I hurried back home to ask my mom if she was sure Marty's father didn't have a wife. She said no, so I told her what I heard in their house. She said not to jump to any conclusions, and that it could have been the TV or a new girlfriend. I didn't like leaving it alone, but I couldn't convince her that something was wrong. I tried going about my business. But the next day, Marty sought me out at school and kept asking me to come over to his house. I asked him about the noise I heard, but he said he couldn't tell me. Then he asked me again to come over, telling me I would never want to leave if I did. People started to notice us together, so I left the conversation and avoided him all day. I stayed away from him for 2 more days. But then, Friday, Marty got off the bus right behind me. His father cut me off, getting in front of me. They boxed me in as Gerard told me that I was going to stay at his house and have the time of my life. I told him to leave me alone. But then, Gerard grabbed my arm. I shouted at the top of my lungs, causing a scene for the other students, which worked in getting Gerard to let me go. I ran home and told my mom immediately, and this time she agreed that it was a good idea to call the police. I begged them to search his house because I thought they were keeping somebody in there, but the cops said there wasn't enough evidence. However, on their way to talk to them, I watched them from my kitchen as one of the cops stopped by the trash can sitting on the curb, his face scrunched up, like he smelled something. He lifted the lid and recoiled, then took a pocket knife and cut open a bag. He looked like he threw up in his mouth before he called his buddies over. My curiosity was killing me. I ran out of the house and barged through the circle of cops around the trash can to get a glimpse. They took me away immediately, but I saw enough. The can was full of trash bags, and the one that had been cut wide open had a chopped up body in it. The discovery led to a full search of the house. The news coverage was all anyone watched for the entirety of Christmas break. They discovered a spot on the basement floor, the only clear surface in the entire house, where it looked like someone had been held. There were 4 steel chains bolted into the bare concrete, far enough apart to indicate the victim was forced to permanently lay flat on their back with their arms and legs stretched out in an X shape. Gerard and his son kept the victim, a man about Gerard's age, for an entire year, keeping him barely alive by force-feeding him with a tube. The large and well-defined stain of defecation indicated that the victim was forced to go where they lay and were never cleaned. That, and the large stain of blood meant that they had been executed and dismembered in the same spot where they were tortured for 12 agonizing months. Gerard had gotten sloppy, allowing the victim to be heard while I was at the door, causing Gerard to panic and kill them. Then he lazily assumed the garbage truck would take the body away. By pure luck, the garbage trucks were delayed that day until Saturday. I'm sure that if I entered their house that day, I would have been the replacement guest. If I had called the cops the first time, that man's life might have been saved. Nobody knows what else Gerard and Marty did to him just yet, but the way they talked about entertaining company makes me think they did little else but torture him and drive him insane for their own enjoyment. I went shopping at Target with my friend Stephanie the day before Thanksgiving. The plan wasn't to buy much of anything, but to pick out what we wanted to grab when we came back on Black Friday. That way, we also could see the difference in prices between the 2 days and find out if the Black Friday deals were actually any good. I wanted to go to the electronics department and do some research on a new camera for myself and a new TV for Steph, since she was planning on moving into my spare bedroom and didn't have a TV of her own. I was browsing the cameras, holding one of the display models, when a Target employee walked up to me asking if I needed any help. He was a bit creepy looking, and he was already looking at my boobs a lot. But he was the only employee in the electronics department, and I was getting confused by the different aspects of the cameras, so I let him help. I told him I was looking to get into photography as a hobby, so I didn't want to spend a lot of money. He asked me if I was planning on taking more pictures or videos, and I answered that I would probably do a little of both. That's when a very concerning smile spread across his face, and I immediately got a bad feeling about him. He said I would probably want a nice microphone and a ring light for my filming setup too. I told him I wasn't going to do anything like that, and I wanted a camera strictly for taking photos of things. Then, he pointed to my chest and said, "You mean those things, right?" I told him to shut up and that he should have some basic respect, and that he should be doing his job instead of hitting on me. Instead of apologizing, he said I could make a lot of money on OnlyFans with my body, and that he would be the first subscriber. Better yet, he'd be part of the videos too. I was about to hit this guy when Steph walked up to join me at the worst possible time. He whistled at her and asked if she was my girlfriend. She and I just had to film each other making out and doing other things, obviously. I finally had enough and shoved the display camera in his face. Then I grabbed Steph and we stormed out. I cussed and complained about that creep for a solid 10 minutes, declaring I would never shop at that Target again if that was the sort of person they hired. In fact, while I was still in the parking lot, I called the store and got a manager on the phone just to report him. I told her the name of the person who harassed me, Colt. That was what it said on the name tag anyway. My heart sank when she told me there was nobody on the staff with that name. And of all people, she would know. Steph and I immediately felt a great sense of danger and drove out of the parking lot right then and there. We went home to my apartment, where I told Steph that I wished she was already moved in instead of waiting until December 1st, with sickos like that fake employee at Target in the world. It's really scary to live alone. She offered to start moving things into the room that day if I didn't charge her rent for the last week of November. But I didn't care about screwing my friend out of almost $200, so I jumped on it. I even helped her move. It was about noon when we started, so we were able to make several car trips from her parents' place to mine, getting almost everything she had except the bigger pieces of furniture, which we planned to rent a truck and grab on Saturday. She would have had to sleep on the couch for a night or two, but that was fine with her. Even though it was late November, it was still 80 degrees out where I lived. So we both worked up a sweat and had to change into shorts and tank tops, which were still soaked by the end of the day. That evening, Steph and I felt much better about things. The next day, we invited some friends over for a small Friendsgiving. Everything was going just fine until the morning of Black Friday. Steph and I got ready to go shopping. But when we opened the door, there was a camera sitting on my welcome mat. I knew exactly what camera it was. The display model that I shoved into the face of that Target creep. I almost fainted. Steph didn't recognize it, so she picked it up and started looking through the photos. Her face went white as a sheet. I had to know what was on it. There were nearly 100 pictures and videos, all of which were of me, Steph, and our friends. The first was a video of our butts as we walked away from him after the initial encounter. After that, there were pictures of us in my car as he followed us to my apartment. Then, he photographed us as we carried heavy objects inside, wearing light clothing and sweating profusely. He even peeped through the window at our Friendsgiving. Unfortunately, he got several partially exposed shots of me in the bathroom, too. The last picture taken was just a piece of paper with writing on it saying, "I told you so." That led me to assume he downloaded the pictures off the camera and uploaded them to the internet. Maybe selling them to some pervert friends of his. I felt sick to my stomach. I wanted to smash the camera, but Steph took it out of my hands before I could and called the police. We showed them the photos and I gave them a description of Colt, even though that probably isn't his real name. I asked if we could access the security footage at Target, but they made a bunch of excuses basically amounting to, it wasn't serious enough. Apparently being stalked by a potentially dangerous predator and voyeur for 2 days doesn't warrant a woman any help from the police. Thankfully, nothing else happened after that. I guess the creep got what he wanted. I've never stopped thinking about it, though.